This is an ABC podcast.
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
So what is a childcare desert? Around 35% of our neighbourhoods are actually classified as a childcare desert. And that means there are more than three children per childcare place. Around 1.1 million Australians living in regional or remote areas, there's no childcare available at all. And socioeconomics comes into the childcare desert debate as well. You're more likely to find a spot for your child if you live in a wealthier area. So what's the reality of living in a childcare desert? And could having no access to childcare determine whether or not you choose to try and have children? Good morning. My name's Rochelle Hunt, your co-host this morning. Kirsten Diprose joining you from ABC Warrnambool. Kirsten, childcare availability and affordability and the rise of deserts is something we've been discussing as a community for some time now. But not only is it not getting better for regional and rural Victoria, it's getting worse. And this is something that you and your circle of friends and family are facing quite acutely.
Absolutely. Good morning, Rochelle. I mean, it's a crisis already, but it's bubbling away to the point where I think we're going to hit some sort of explosion in terms of how we as a society have to live. Like, it's impacting us all. So I live in southwest Victoria, and I'm sitting in Warrnambool today, and I was chatting to someone in Warrnambool who has a three-year-old who never got a place, and now her three-year-old's at kinder, so she's like, she gets a little bit of childcare because of kinder. And she said she's asked the daycare centre to then put her six-month-old baby to take that spot in the hope that, you know, she can stay in the wait list so that she's already got that 3 years of waiting. I've got another friend who's got a four-year-old who's never been able to get daycare, another one who's got a nanny because she can't get daycare. The list goes on and on, and it's across rural and regional Australia. Parents are waiting. 3 years is kind of standard from what I hear, 5 years. And, you know, we're about to meet someone who has never been able to get her now 10-year-old son into daycare.
And it's easy to think, well, this doesn't impact me. You know, my kids are grown up now. I don't have children. This is not an issue that impacts me. But it actually does. The flow-on impacts for the entire community, because let's face facts, the majority of people who will then stay home to look after the children will be women. Those women then can't get back into the workforce. They can't take up jobs. They can't study. And they're the jobs that you're missing out on. So if you go to hospital or if you need a teacher, all of the jobs that are predominantly held by women, these women now can't get back into the workforce. The flow-on impacts, especially for regional and rural areas, impact everyone. It might even be the decision as to whether or not you stay in that community. So this is an entire societal issue. Do you feel like it's being addressed? Is it something that you can see any solutions in sight for your community?
I think there are definitely solutions, and I look forward to talking about some of them on the program today. I know the Parenthood has done extensive research into this, and we'll be speaking to someone about that. And in that research, they actually found that 450 towns in Australia with a population under 3,000 don't have centre-based daycare. So 450 towns around Australia. And that means travelling for a long time. It might mean having to get daycare, if you're lucky enough to be able to get it, an hour to 2 hours away, which then just makes it not feasible. And there's also that fear of, oh gosh, you know, my child's sick or they've fallen and now I'm 2 hours away. How do I go and get them? We need women in the workplace. Everyone talks about that. Our economy needs that. And yet we're making it so impossible, particularly for our regional and rural towns. And they're suffering for it. And, you know, hospitals are suffering for it.
Are there the centres but not the workers? Or are the centres not opening because there's not the workers? Where do you begin to draw the dots here?
Oh, yeah, there's the facilities, there's centres. There are so many centres because they've closed. They're just not the workers, you know. There was a great centre in Dunkeld near me and it closed a couple of years ago. Centres are closing all the time. It's not about a physical place. It's about people working. It's the same with our hospitals and, you know, about beds being open. It's not about the beds. It's about the people to look after patients in beds. Same with childcare.
So is this something that impacts you? Do you live in what's classified a childcare desert? And what extremes have you gone to be able to get back into the workforce? Maybe you've had to rely on grandparents, on parents. Maybe you've had to look at an au pair or a nanny. And do you then consider the big decisions around maybe moving from the area that you're in, or even to the other extreme of potentially considering not having children at all because you just can't get childcare?
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
Good morning, Rochelle Hunt here with you. In Melbourne, Kirsten Diprose is your co-host this morning, joining you from ABC Warrnambool as we look at the rising number of childcare deserts and what that means for the entire community. How long has it taken you to get your child into a daycare centre? And if you live in a regional area, would you consider working or maybe even moving to a regional area to work within the childcare sector? There's been huge conversations just of late around the pay and the way that we, or maybe the lack of respect that we have for the childcare profession, Kirsten. I think a lot of that will come into today as well.
Let's meet Tara Rich now, because she's a mother of two children in Goroke in the Wimmera and has struggled to get adequate childcare for 10 years. Tara, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Kirsten and Rochelle. I actually have three children.
Ah, sorry.
There's one in the middle there that I'm sure she'll be feeling like the classic middle child.
I was going to say, the classic middle child. They're easily forgotten.
Yeah.
But yeah. Tara, tell me about the struggles with first your eldest child, because this sort of points to it being an issue before the current crisis, where it has been absolutely impossible to get childcare, but it's been difficult for years before that.
Yeah, it's certainly not a new challenge in our particular region. My oldest child is 9, he'll be 10 in November. And as Rochelle said, we were sort of faced after he was born with the issue of, well, how am I going to return to work? I was working as a police officer in a town an hour from where we are on the farm, and there was no childcare in our local town. And for me to access childcare in Horsham, which is the local largest centre, there were wait lists of 2 to 3 years. And so,
oh my goodness.
So I actually ended up resigning, and I now look at it as, you know, a great opportunity, because then I studied a Bachelor of Business and now I work from home in a really great job that I love in marketing. And it was a whole evolution, but essentially it's probably...
But you're lucky that that's kind of worked out. That's not always the case. I mean, Horsham, I spent some time there presenting the breakfast program. It's not a small town, right? I mean, it's relatively small, but the fact that you can't get childcare there is... Yeah. Incredible, and I'm sure that that is a carbon copy for a lot of towns the same size. But when people think, Tara, well, this doesn't impact me, you are a police officer. You were someone who was serving your community and had to quit your job as someone in frontline services. Was that a big decision for you?
Yeah, it was massive, because that was my first job. I went to the police academy when I was 19. And so that was my identity. And so becoming a first-time parent and moving to the farm was a real challenge, because my life changed in so many ways. It was challenging. But certainly, seeing other mums also who did have access to childcare in Horsham with their children juggle the juggle, it was also sort of a turn-off. You know, they're driving an hour to put their children in daycare, working 8 hours, bringing their child home another hour, and trying to do all the other things before it's dark. It was just, you know, and mums locally still do it, and I take my hat off to them, but it's just a real challenge. And also without support from grandparents locally, a lot of us have married into the region and heavily reliant on our in-laws for support. And if you don't actually have that, it's nearly impossible.
And Tara, there's this whole kind of mental load aspect to it that you just touched on. It's like you have to almost work to be able to get to work.
Yeah, I know. It's really challenging. And just thinking about, you know, people who are still doing that. So my sister-in-law is a great example. She has two children and they're 5 and 3. And she was offered a childcare place 4 years after her daughter was born, and it took her 4 years to get a spot in Horsham, and that's actually normal. And now she, as you said also, she has her second child in there also, but seeing her try to juggle her career whilst working with the children and sort of informal childcare education and support was really, really challenging for her.
Tara, stay with us because let's sort of move around 2 hours away from where you are and speak to Aaron Paik, who's the mum of two young girls who's also been affected by recent closures of the Hopetown Childcare Centre. Aaron, how has the closure of this centre impacted you? I mean, for Melbourne, when people are 2 hours away, it might seem like a long time, but for you guys, you might be driving 2 hours just to get to childcare.
We are so lucky that we have had a childcare centre here, and we have about 20 children that go there. So our next childcare centre would be 45 minutes away. So it's very hard for us mums to even contemplate of driving that far to drop the children off to come back. It's just affected everyone here with all those that amount of kids.
Yeah, so were you working in Hopetown? So it was working quite well at the time.
Oh, it was amazing. So I moved from Horsham up to Hopetown about 5 years ago, and I'm like, what am I going to have here? And they did have the childcare and the kinder there, and I was like, well, this is perfect. When I do have kids, I'll be set. I had my kids in. They were perfect. They loved it. And then just this year, we just got that call saying it's not going to, you know, it's going to take another extra month to reopen, and we're like, what? And then we get another one saying, nah, by the end of March, it's closed, temporary closed.
So what are the discussions that happen over the dinner table that night about your options, you know, big picture? There's the short-term panic of, okay, how do we fix this? And then there's the long-term, well, you can't do this forever, right? You can only keep the Band-Aid on for so long. What sort of big conversations did you start to have?
Well, my husband is a self-employed autolex, so he's the main, you know, provider for us. So I thought, well, if it has to come down to that, I'm going to have to stop working. But, you know, in this day, you know, you need those two incomes. So we've just had to rally around and ask pretty much everyone. We've got a group of childcare mothers that we're all trying to help out if they can work, after a child.
So you've created like your own pseudo childcare centre, the village scenario. Wow.
Pretty much, yeah. We've got a, you know, if someone needs help, we'll put in a group and say, hey, I need help with this day. Can anyone look after my child as well? And they've always said, you know, the more the better that they work, play together. So we're just relying on each other in town.
Erin, you mentioned about how when you're looking at moving to Hopetown, you were thinking, oh, great, there's childcare there. Because I think we forget it's critical infrastructure like schools are when you're looking at moving to an area. Hopetown's only got 700 people, and I can hear your little one there because you don't have daycare.
No. I've had to take today off as the person that was looking after the child, her kid's sick. So she's like, can you not bring this one in? So I'm like, yeah, that's fine. I'll work from home.
So this is the reality, isn't it?
It is, yes. Yeah.
But does it change, you know, what you're thinking about staying in that town? You know, a town with 700 people, every person counts.
Yeah. It does go over your mind. You do think of that as well. Like, you know, hubby's got a great business here, but if it comes to push, comes to shove, he could take that wherever he wants. But we love this town. We don't want to leave. We've set up, you know, you've got your house and everything, you're all set up here. But yeah, as one of the other girls said, if it comes to that, she might have to move back to Melbourne. We might have to think of somewhere else, but it's the same everywhere. Like, I've got family in Horsham, so if I move there, it's the same issue.
Tara, back to you. Does there need to be greater incentives to get workers, childcare workers? We know they need to be paid more. I mean, the work that they do, I mean, for years, and this is the conversation that's happening at the moment, for years, for generations, it was unpaid work. And as a result, that has tipped into, I guess, the psychology around why and how we underpay people like childcare workers now. We just don't value that work. How do we get childcare workers into regional Victoria? And is the solution that simple?
Yeah, I think it's sort of a workforce-wide issue, especially in our region. You know, the expectation is someone can't move here and live here if they don't have a house and they don't have access to community. So really providing that support and infrastructure for them. So whether they do get a teaching contract and a house is provided and a work car or whatever they need. And I think even incorporating them into the community. So, you know, having them join the footy club or the local Lions or Apex club, just really making them part of the heartbeat of the towns, because they really are. We're so reliant on them. And I think also it's not just care they're giving our children. And I've seen it, you know, from my first child down now to my third, the emotional development and socialisation skills that helps our children become school ready. They're so undervalued, and our childcare centre staff are critical in helping us. And the balance with working from home, which is so fantastic, is that when I am working from home and my children are also home, I'm not being a very engaged parent, and I'm not being the best mum I can be. So having that support is just so valuable in your child's development and also in your professional capacity.
Absolutely, absolutely. Tara Rich, thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate it. And Erin Paik, thank you for your time as well. We wish you the best.
Thanks so much.
Erin's in Hopetown and Tara is in Goroki. Have I pronounced that correctly?
Goroke.
Thank you. As that was coming out of my mouth, I'm like, I think I'm mispronouncing that town. That's one way to really get the locals offside. Mispronounce the town. This is interesting, right? And this is, I guess, that really big picture lens on today's conversation. This is from Pat, who's in Emerald, and it says, "This disturbs me. We've created an economy that requires both parents to work despite child psychologists telling us that the most desirable environment for preschool children is a loving home with an attentive parent. I listened recently to a program exploring the fact that children and young people don't know how to cook simple things because parents are too busy to teach them. We discussed that here on the Conversation Hour. The childcare ratios are never approximate to the parent relationship, neither will love and care. We're sacrificing the best care of our children because of the economy. We should be paying parents to stay at home and do the sort of parenting that only a parent can do. We're risking an entire generation." Now, look, there's lots of debates around, you know, the health benefits and the socialisation benefits of a child going in to childcare. But when that choice is taken away from you, I think that's when it becomes a bigger issue. So do you live in a childcare desert? How is it impacting you, your ability to go back to work? And what are the onflow impacts for your entire community?
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is the Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
Good morning, Rochelle Hunt here with you in Melbourne. Kirsten Dipper is joining you from ABC Warrnambool as we look at childcare deserts and the impact on women and the entire community if you don't get access or you can't get access to childcare. This is from Sandra, and it says, "This is not about childcare, it's about the lack of respect for women." Leah Rupenum is a professor of sociology, and she's the founding director for the Future of Work Lab at the University of Melbourne. Leah, this is something that you are so passionate about. It's about choice. It's about ensuring that women have access to be able to get back into the workforce if they choose to be. But I think a lot of people see these as an issue or as a problem for that individual family unit and don't see it as a bigger issue and problem for the entire community.
It's an all of the above issue. I'm going to say, hi, everyone. So lovely to be here. Thank you for having me. I think what you're tapping on is everyone is right. It's an individual issue because families can't actually find or identify high quality, affordable, accessible care. It's a structural issue because childcare workers aren't paid enough money, and therefore it's difficult to have enough labor supply coming in. And then it's a challenge for all families who need two incomes to work, right? Like, you need to have the choice, and you need to have flexibility. I think there's questions that have come through, really interesting comments coming through in the previous segment about, should you be paying parents to do the work? Well, maybe, right? Because some of that time's out of labor, and we know that women tend to do that work, and it's at the expense of their superannuation. And maybe that's one solution. Are we trialing it? Can we see if it works? And then there's questions about, how do you make sure there's enough access to childcare resources in these regional areas? And I think part of that is about the ways in which childcare deserts get allocated and how we think about childcare work as being women's work that is, you know, isn't valued in the way it should be, in part because these are childcare educators. And we know that childcare is so critical for children's development, that having children in these high quality early childhood education and care programs is so good for their long-term outcomes. So this is touching not just now, but looking at children's futures, women's futures, and family futures. So the answer is, it's an everybody problem. And because it's an everybody problem, it requires an everybody solution.
Leo, why is women's work not valued in the same way? Because when I look at what childcare workers do, you know, they're raising our next generation. It's incredibly hard work, and it requires certain skills and a certain temperament, you know, like there are qualities and skills that you need to have to be able to do that job. It's very taxing and can be quite emotionally taxing to be around young children all day.
Oh my God. It's like, have you ever been around five children under five?
No, I couldn't do it.
Take a nap? you're like, I need to lay down in a dark room for at least 45 minutes. And these people are doing this every day. So you are like 1,000% right. It is absolutely exhausting work. One of the things we're talking about and we're doing through a lab is we're trying to help reframe this type of work is not as key and critical work that's building skills for the future of work. So when we think about childcare workers, we think about parents who have taken a period of time to parental leave, that during that period of time, you can hear when people engage with young children that they have a shift in their vision. They have a shift in their experiences. They have a shift in their skill set. You are changed by being the primary carer to a young child or to someone who's in your family. Because care sits across a life course, right? We're thinking about care for kids, but you're going to care at some point in your life. It is what it is to be human. And so what we're trying to do, we've run this parenting work skills certificate. We piloted it with Oz Super last year, and we were working with parents who were taking this parental leave period. But you can make the same argument with childcare workers. So what you're actually doing is you're building in key and critical future work skills. You have to be adaptable. You have to be creative. You have to have time management. You are building out all these human skills in your interaction with children. But in addition to that, and I don't want to undermine the work of childcare workers, they are highly skilled. They are trained to understand what children at different developmental stages need, how to bring in activities, insights, hands-on, you know, multimodal experiences for these kids to help build them up, right? When I was a parent of a young child, I had no clue. It was like, here's a little bit of Play-Doh. I don't know.
The moment you take your child to childcare, you're like, okay, let a professional deal with you right now because I have no idea what I'm doing. I love the idea, too, of just reframing it from a caring role to a critical role. There are some solutions coming in on the text line, Leah. One that says, what about paying grandparents? That would be a good idea. I need to consider giving up work to assist with childcare. I'd be financially worse off, but my son and his partner are reluctant putting their six-month-old into care. The role of grandparents can't be understated here, but like so many things, we take it for granted that people, it's almost like the comparison of the bank of mum and dad. There's this assumption that A, you have parents, and B, that they're wealthy enough to give you money. So this assumption that you have grandparents that have the time and that are willing and capable and want to, I mean, don't forget they're going into retirement. They've worked hard their entire lives. Now they want to get on with their lives too. Are we relying on grandparents just too much as a society, do you think, to pick up the slack?
I think that people should be utilizing whatever resources they have access to and for people who want to do it. And then I think that second point about should you be paying the grandparents, Sure, right? Like, why? We are in a care crisis. Like, you are in the midst of a care crisis. It's a system that isn't working for anybody. It's a labor supply issue of how do you get more people in to do the care? And so if the answer is that grandparents are willing and able, right? If you have grandparents that exist that are present and want to do that work, why can't there be a compensation piece coming through? Why can't that, and who pays for it, I think is the question, right? And I think it's really important because we often think about that work. It's often, again, women's work. And we know that women tend to do this work for free, unpaid, without superannuation contributions. And so I think there is a question about how do you explore these more informal forms of care? Mm. And then how do you compensate them? So I'm not here to say don't use your grandparents. If they're able,
this shouldn't be a reliance or an expectation, either the children or by society or by the government, whoever it may be. Leah, so lovely to catch up with you and speak with you. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
Leah Rupin, a professor of sociology and the founding director of the Future of Work Lab at the University of Melbourne. There's a text here that says, this is an issue for parents. It's not an issue for women. As a male parent, the women parents in the community excluded me from playgroups, playgrounds. I understood it in the first few months. Who wants to, it sort of goes on with other lots of issues, but there's blokes that in the exclusion, and this has continued for years. We need respect for parents of all kind, please. I guess absolutely, 100%. We've got same-sex parents. We have dads that stay home, but the majority of the time, it's still women.
Oh, and the more men that we have in child caring roles, the better it is for all of us. Because I think sometimes men don't understand if they're not doing the child caring, you know, you can't sort of see what the issue is if you're not really doing it. So the more dads we have, the better, I think. This text from David in Brunswick who says, my son got into uni before he got a place in childcare. And I mean, that's quite, you know, making fun of it. But a lot of kids are now getting into kinder or even school before they actually get a childcare place. Let's go to some talk back now. And Michael Leaney is actually called in. He's a counsellor from Borbor Shire. Hi, Michael.
Hi, how are you going?
Good, thanks. What did you want to say?
Really simply, we have an extension of this problem, which is the preschool. So the Erica preschool, which is located in a remote location of the Shire, is due to be closed by the private operator, and that's been supported by the education department. So from 2025, our local families have to travel a minimum of 40 minutes to get to their local preschool.
And Erica it's a beautiful community, but it's a tiny community. And I guess then you start to have the conversations around public versus private and what role the government should play here in ensuring that communities, in particular regional communities, have access to childcare.
Indeed. Well, the region has a population of about 550. When you look compared to Hopetoun, which is 700, it's not that much different. And we have 10 kids wanting to enrol for 2025, but the magic number we're told is 11. So if we get 11, I dare say the magic number will become 14. If there's a decision made by the private sector that they don't want to do it, they can pull out of areas and create a desert, as you've been talking about.
What's the role of councils, or what's the sort of pressure on councils? Because councils have a role in daycare. They often do family daycare. My kids went to a wonderful family daycare centre in Glen Thompson, which is still open, and I hope it does because they're wonderful educators there. But, you know, is there a lot of pressure on council to provide these centres because a lot of these private ones can't seem to stay open?
Well, in the case of the Erica preschool, the council actually physically owns the building, and it's a built-for-purpose kindergarten. It's not just a public hall or anything like that. But we don't run kindergartens and haven't done for over 25 years since Shires were amalgamated. So that's been run by the private sector. But we do certainly provide the building and maintain them. And quite often we have the leaseholders, the private sector. So in this case, funnily enough, the lease came up for expiry of this building at the end of 2024, and I think that was basically the reason why the private operator decided it was their way to get out of it. Unfortunately, this decision was supported by the education department.
Is there any hope of another childcare centre opening up for the community of Erica?
Well, no. and this is a preschool, and the worry is that we lose the preschool, which is basically compulsory for 3- and 4-year-old kinder for people to send their kids to preschool. We're forcing people to drive 40 minutes to get to the local one. It takes women out of the workforce. We desperately need them up here because there's so few people do the jobs that are around. So we don't need people taken out of the workforce. And, of course, the school principal locally in Rawson is very worried because, obviously, a preschool is a feeder to the school, and that will be the next to go.
And this is the thing when we talk about the onflow impacts for that entire community. Michael, good to hear from you. Thank you. Michael Leaney, there, who called our talkback line, is a councillor from the Bor Bor Shire. So have you struggled to get your child into childcare, and how does that impact you, your family and your community?
ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
The rise of childcare deserts, and I guess the extreme, Kirsten Dipros, that people are going to in order to make it work for their family. Texts are coming in saying the best arrangement that we had was both of us work 3 days per week with only 1 day overlap, so no needing for childcare. That's from Robin. We heard earlier from Tara at the beginning of the program. She was a local police officer in her area. She quit her job because she couldn't get access to childcare and had to start her own business. And at the even more extreme end, we are hearing that some people are even considering whether or not to have children at all because it's just getting so difficult. Dr. Mark Rogers is a senior lecturer in early childhood education and a postdoctoral fellow at the Manor Institute. Mark, you've been researching, I guess, what's been labelled a baby drought, and you sort of put drought and desert together. I mean, are they connected?
Oh, absolutely, because in the childcare desert areas that you've been talking about, which is mainly regional, rural and remote areas, and also low-income metropolitan areas, we've got three families competing for one space, and that's in the really good areas. In remote areas, it could be 18 families or 20 families competing for that one space. So if families are deciding to have a child or have another child, it means that they've got to wait such a long time for the space. The child could even be ready for school by the time it becomes available. So that's going to impact families' ability to work. So parents' ability to work, how much they can work, what type of work they can do. You know, you had a caller there that was talking about whether they had to quit their job. So it could be that they have to take work that mightn't be what they're trained in. So they might have to do shift work while the other parent is home, which might be the area that they're either interested in or qualified to do. And that's got flow-on effects not only for the family but the community, because these communities do need people with skills.
Dr. Mark Rogers, can we unpack this notion of the baby drought, which I know you've done research in? What is a baby drought, and why are women in Australia having fewer babies?
Yeah, so there's a lot of reasons, and some of it goes with what's happened in other, I guess, developed countries, where you've got women who have got great skills, good access to education, and they're staying in the workforce longer. And then that means that they're having their first child at a later date, or they just don't have children because there might be fertility issues, or they're just not in a position or in a relationship where they feel that they can have a baby, or it just doesn't happen for them because they're starting that relationship cycle or that reproductive age a lot later. So another reason is because we've got great access to all of the family planning and the contraceptive, and they're relatively affordable. So that's sort of what's not unique about Australia. But what is unique is we've got a lot of policies that came into place in the 80s or even earlier that were designed and set up for men, but then they weren't thinking about women at the time because that wasn't their experience. And those hangovers are really impacting women now. So things like HEX, because if a woman takes time out of the workforce, their HEX debt is festering and growing and rising while they're having time out. and then they can't get access to early education, or they can't get services in rural, regional and remote Australia.
So superannuation is another one, which we've only just in Victoria received, well, in Australia, sorry, received. Women have finally got super for when they have maternity leave. But that's another one.
Absolutely. There's just so many things that we've done in the past that we've set them up, not with an evil intent, just not thinking about women, because women weren't at the table when these policies were put into place, or if they were, they were in such few numbers that they didn't really get a say. And so what we need to do, what the government needs to do, is go back and have a look at these policies and think, well, was that really thinking about women? Yeah. And does that unfairly impact women now? And what do we need to do to really support women? And then they will have children, because the flow-on effect, if they're not having children, is going to be profound for our communities and our country, because we won't have the labour to look after and provide services for the ageing population. We won't have the income that's provided by young people when they're paying taxes. So it's going to have all sorts of ramifications.
Absolutely. But also we've looked at all of these issues for so long in a gendered way, and not just towards women, but towards men as well. There's a text here from Seth, right? So this is really interesting. I think Seth is bang on. And it says, I've been a stay-at-home dad and I've returned to work. My wife and I both look after our kids. If you give men flexible work options, it gives women more options to work as well. If it's seen as a women's problem, not as a parent's problem, it will stay a woman's problem. So that idea of not looking at it in a gendered way, but looking at it as a household, you know, because it's not even necessarily going to be a man and woman that makes up a family. This is just such an old-fashioned way of looking at things. So
it is, yeah. And look, I think Seth's right. In a lot of countries where they've said, you can have parent, like within the household or within the family unit, both parents can have time to be at home, about parenting paid leave, then they found that both parents, whatever gender they are having that greater connection, and they have a use it or lose it policy in some of these. And so it means that the other parent, the non-birth parent, is taking time to have with the child, and it's having huge and profound impacts on the family moving forward, because they're more likely to say, well, hang on, I was just going to stay and work 5 days a week. Actually, I really want more time with my child. I'm going to try and work 4 days a week so I can have that, or 3 days a week. And that means you, as the birth parent, can have more time with your career as well. So it's much more of a shared parenting responsibility.
What about some of the other countries that, you know, do it better, that perhaps we could learn from? I know a good friend of mine has moved from Melbourne to Denmark, and her childcare costs have gone down substantially. And she is coming back to Melbourne and is on the waiting lists. But she said that in Denmark, it's all catered for, school as well, your work hours and school hours. It's seamless there.
So what happened was, during the Second World War, a lot of women worked, and they did in Australia as well. But in Europe, they didn't say, okay, well, the war's over, back to normal. What they did was they said, okay, we're going to need women in the workforce, because there were far fewer men and there was a labour shortage. And it meant that that became part of the school system. It was seen the same way as school is. So, you know, in Germany, you might pay $80 for the year, and that's just to help with, you know, a bit of an excursion or things like that. And so we've set up this really odd system where we've got the highest level of privatisation almost in the world, and then we've got a very complex system that parents need to navigate. It's very expensive, and also we've got that blame game, because it's partly Commonwealth funded and it's partly state funded, and it means that they can just throw grenades at each other and they can blame the other one if it's not doing very well. So what they do need to do is say, okay, this isn't really working, we're in a crisis situation. And so we have to have departments of education in each state and territory, starting to build and staff early learning services on their premises and making them free to access.
Yeah. Like workplace childcare, that's another issue that lots of people always raise, especially for those that work in government sectors. You know, if you're in nursing, if in any kind of service industry, that childcare once upon a time was provided in some jobs and in some roles. Just finally, Mark, there's a text here from Leanne that says, part of the problem with early childhood education is privatisation. Leave it to the private sector, and if it's not profitable, the community suffers. Is the government doing enough?
Look, I think they've inherited, and it's not this, it's not bipartisan, like it's not partisan, it's bipartisan. There's this system that's built up over decades, and it's a mess. And so it's going to take someone, a government who's really courageous to change it, because you've got these different people who will be lobbying government. You've got the private sectors, and you've got that business model. And business models and education models don't really fit very well, because really, ultimately, we're talking about educating children. And so why is there a business model in there? Like, it really doesn't fit together, and it really needs pulling apart. And that's going to be really difficult to do the way it's set up.
Dr. Marg Rogers, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. Bye.
Dr. Marg Rogers there, Senior Lecturer in Early Childhood Education at UNE. On the text line, there are quite a few texts. Hi, why do people have children at all when they believe they have the right to put them in care for extended periods? I hear that a lot.
Yeah, that debate is continual around whether or not... look, it's an old-fashioned way to think, really, isn't it? I would think that if it's not a choice for a lot of people. And the other thing is, childcare is not a punishment. It's a great place for your child to flourish. It's also a great opportunity for the parent who has stayed at home to be able to have a moment to breathe and to be able to get on top of things. I think looking at it as, oh, here's, I'm going to pop you into this little mini jail and, you know, you're going to be stuck in a room and not do anything. It's just not how childcare operates most of the time. Well, it's not how they should.
And there's this text message saying, sometimes parents like me need childcare due to severe postnatal depression. This is so vital for the parent. That's from Michelle in Stawell. Absolutely. You know, I know that I took my first child to childcare for 5 hours a day, one day a week when he was 6 months old, because I needed that break for my mental health. You know, like I needed that. And that's all I used it for. And it was the best thing for me then. And we don't talk about that enough as well, because we've got this sort of strange system where I think no one designed it to be this way. Society's changed, gender roles have changed, the cost of living has gone up dramatically, and we're here trying to work out how do we make it work for everyone.
And everyone having an opinion on what the perfect parent looks like. Well, if you're, you know, you shouldn't do this or you should do that if you're a parent. It's everyone's individual decision to do what is right for them and what is right for their family. And fundamentally, as long as that child is being loved and cared for and is in a safe and happy environment, that's all that matters. And all of those things can occur in a childcare setting as well. They just need to be funded properly. They need to be set up properly. You need the workers to be paid correctly, because this is what it is. It is caring for our children. So have you struggled to get childcare? Do you live in one of these childcare deserts? And how has it impacted you and your family?
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
Michelle Hunt here with you in Melbourne. Kirsten Dipro is joining you from ABC Warrnambool. Access, affordability to childcare is a constant debate in this state, but in some regional and rural parts of Victoria, childcare deserts are becoming so common, and that impacts the entire community. Maddie Butler is the campaign director at The Parenthood, which is an advocacy organisation for parents and carers trying to help parents thrive. Maddie, fundamentally, we're all running around in the dark just trying to do the best that we can. If you don't have access to childcare, what sort of impact can it have on the parent and the child and the entire family dynamic?
Oh, look, and firstly, thank you for having me on today. The flow-on effects just
go on and on and on, to be honest. Children miss out on the social, educational, health and well-being benefits that early learning provides. Parents struggle to get to work and also struggle, as you were mentioning before, to have just a bit of respite, a bit of time on their own. And then the effects on whole communities are massive. So if essential workers can't get to work, then there aren't enough staff at hospitals, in schools. That has a huge impact on the whole community. And what we're seeing is that the livability of regions sometimes declines, all because people can't have access to childcare. Families aren't moving to regions, or they're going to have to move away because they just can't get their kids a spot.
And Maddie, we heard that at the start of this program with Erin Paik, who the childcare centre has closed at Hopetoun. She moved there from Horsham, and, you know, that brings a family. Her husband's an auto-elect. That's a great skill for the town to have. If she leaves, and she's considering it now, that skill goes, her skill, she runs a neighbourhood centre, that's gone. We've got to think broader than just how it's impacting households.
Exactly. It's not an isolated issue. It's something that everybody needs to be thinking about. I hear stories constantly from regional, rural and remote areas where businesses just aren't finding employees because they don't have access to childcare.
The idea that people are coming up with their own solutions, grandparents, if you have grandparents, if they're able to look after your child, then that is one. But we hear time and time again of parents creating these little mini villages and almost like a pseudo childcare option. Everyone sort of puts their hand up and says, okay, I'll take one day, whatever it may be. But that, okay, it sounds kind of all lovely and very community oriented, but being a childcare educator is a skill, and it takes skill and education to be able to look after multiple children at once and to ensure that you are doing the right thing by that child as well. But are there solutions outside of either a public or a private childcare centre? Are there other ways of doing this, do you think?
Yeah, and look, as you say, while it's beautiful when communities come together, as I've always said, I've got a five-year-old myself. She's delightful. I don't know how I would manage more than one of her in a room with me, because there's also that educational aspect of it. There's so many things that early childhood educators provide that parents don't necessarily have the skill set for. But there are definitely different solutions. There's mobile early learning services. There could be different kinds of play groups used in some areas. But what we want to see is the federal government take on responsibility for all of this. Because in some communities, they're able to come together, they're able to job share or find some kind of solution that might work for them. But it can be a lot of stress, it can be a lot of pressure, and it's just not always possible everywhere, and every single child deserves access to some form of early childhood education and care. So that's why we want to see the federal government step up and ensure that that's possible.
For some people that are maybe debating whether or not you should even think about and consider childcare, because if you do, then why did you have kids in the first place? What if you flip that? Because there's a text here that says, well, people are entitled to childcare. This is a terrible attitude. All kinds of things are a community responsibility. We care for the young and we care for the old. So when you think about childcare through the lens of aged care, it sort of shifts the dynamic a little bit, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, and it's definitely just a part of our society. We should think about children, of course, as children and what their needs are, but we also need to think about them as the next generation. They're going to continue our society for us, and we want to give them the very best start in life. And that means having really valuable time with their families and their extended families, but also being able to have those opportunities for education and for socialization, getting them ready for school. The parenthood isn't saying that there's any one set way that parents should raise their children, but they need to have that choice so they can have a really a good balance of what's right for their family.
I'm really concerned about our rural and regional towns as well. We're using words like childcare deserts, baby drought, and it plays into that kind of idea of rural and regional areas being these backwaters and these desperate places, which is not
true. No access to anything.
Exactly. Yeah. And this is exactly what we don't want, because we want people to live in our beautiful rural and regional places. I love living where I live on a farm. So how can we turn this around, and how can we make our governments listen to us, Maddie? I know you guys are working hard, but what can we do to support our towns, and what would you like to see governments do?
Well, I know firstly we need to keep talking about this. So last year the Parenthood released a report with 166 stories and case studies from regional, rural and remote Australia, and we'll be doing something similar later this year. We're also bringing together a coalition, and we're going to launch a joint statement at the end of May. And what we're calling on is for the federal government, but with state, territory and local governments, to take a coordinated and streamlined approach to this, and to ensure that every single child, no matter where they are, has some form of access to early childhood education and care. Because like you were saying, like, these areas are absolutely beautiful, and I hear so many stories of families moving in and they love the towns that they go to, but they just struggle with getting childcare.
Maddie, thank you so much for your time. Maddie Butler, the campaign director at the Parenthood. You can jump online to find out more information about them. Gosh, it gets really personal and heated, this conversation, and everybody has an opinion on it, which is great. But you just always have to let people and trust that people are trying to do the best thing for themselves and for their children. And it's different for everybody. And how you did it may not be how somebody else does it. And that's okay.
And we can't turn back the clock to the 1980s, because the world is a very different place, and we have to accept that and find a new way of making caring for children part of our society and almost being excited about it. Like, it's a real, it's a privilege, and I don't think we honour it enough.
And I'm loving all the stay-at-home dads that have messaged in today. Let's end with this one. Good morning, stay-at-home dad here. My daughter is in childcare 2 days per week and absolutely loves it. She comes home with new language, new skills, is very excited to go back. The 2 days allows me to get on top of things at home. The socialisation aspect is great too, and will be invaluable when she starts kinder. Overall, we're much better off for having the luxury of childcare. And a shower shout out to the wonderful educators at the Buninyong Childcare Centre, where his daughter must go. Kirsten Diprose, thank you so much for today. And I couldn't agree more, even in that we have to potentially change the language around this to ensure that our beautiful regional and rural areas don't get left behind. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you, Rochelle.
Don't forget, The Conversation Hour is a podcast. Go to the ABC Listen app.